It's Morning Edition on KUT. I'm Emily Donahue. Imagine, the world as you know it has ended. People are gone. Food is scarce. Vicious animals roam freely. You are alone, fighting an enemy so devious, so powerful, so undetectable, you question your own sanity. You're 16. That is the premise of Rick Yancey's new novel, The Fifth Wave. Rick Yancey, thanks so much for being here at KUT this morning.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Now, this book is billed as a young adult novel, but as I have admitted to you already, I could not put it down.
Well, thanks.
It's about an alien invasion, yet it's so much more. You've written a book about aliens that feels like a book about growing up.
Yes. You know, I tell people it's a book about humans in the face of an alien apocalypse. About what becomes of us in a species-threatening event, which is what this turns out to be. They haven't come to enlighten us or educate us or to do anything but eradicate us. And the horror of those events, as seen through the eyes of Cassie, the 16-year-old narrator, and a couple other narrators of the book, is nearly overwhelming in its scope. And what fascinated me as a writer was once we strip away everything, and throughout the course of the book, that is exactly what happens to Cassie and the others, is everything that they have trusted in, relied upon, believed in, thought would happen, down to, you know, when we get up in the morning, we think nothing when we flip the light switch, down to that can never even be relied on again. You know, what remains? And that's what fascinated me about this book. Plus the fact that it's a thriller. And that's the kind of books I like to read and obviously the kind of book I wanted to write.
There is a question running through this narrative, sort of the deep existential questions of being, who am I and why am I here? Mm-hmm. And in the midst of this thriller, many of your characters actually answer that question.
Right. I think that's, you know, like in the main wheelhouse of teen fiction, at least good teen fiction, you know. It's been a while since I was a teen, but, you know, that is a question that I wrestled with as a teen, is who am I? How do I fit in? What is fundamentally me and what is being, you know, defined for me by peers or my parents or, you know, people in the community? You know, who am I?
And these are questions that the aliens are asking as well, or some of them, right?
Yes, exactly. There is a line from the book that I think it's Cassie who says, you know, to rid the earth of humans, first you need to rid them of their humanity. And that is the central thrust of the book. You know, what does it ultimately mean to be human?
Well, let's talk a little bit about that narrative. The fifth wave. That's hard to say.
Yes.
It is the fifth in a series of attacks that
yes.
have brought Cassie to the sort of point of no return.
Right.
Can you describe the four waves that preceded this?
Yes. One of the particular odd pleasures about writing this book was trying to think like an alien and realizing, you know, there's certain practical problems involved in ridding the earth of, you know, 7 billion pretty highly advanced indigenous species, I say. And it occurred to me, you know, that it probably could not be accomplished in one fell swoop. Not if the design was to, you know, keep the earth for their own inhabitation, which is, you know, probably the only reason we'd ever get visited is not for someone just to stop by and say hello and take some soil samples and pluck some leaves and go home.
Plant a flag.
Right, right. It probably wouldn't be a situation like that. My first idea was, you know, take away the human ability to communicate and also what we have by means of technology that could help us fight them or help us survive. You know, it's well known if you generate an electromagnetic pulse that's strong enough, you could knock out all electronics. You could knock out cars, planes, elevators, the electricity. You could knock basically humanity back 200 years in a matter of moments. It could happen. So that was the first wave. The second wave takes advantage of two facts. One is that the earth has an unstable surface. We're not flat and hard like a billiard ball. There is, you know, tectonic plates that constantly push against each other and create pressure. And when they slip, there's earthquakes. And when they slip in the oceans, there's tsunamis. The other fact that you probably would take advantage of is 40% of humanity lives within 60 miles of a coastline. So you wouldn't need to even leave your mothership. All you would have to do is drop a metal pole about twice the size of the Empire State Building into each of these fault lines. That would create massive earthquakes, tsunamis never seen before on Earth, basically wipe out every major city on the planet. That would be the second wave. The survivors would flee inland, and everybody left, understanding at this point that they did not come in peace, would begin to group together. It's a basic human instinct. I explain it to kids like this. You know, I talk about the Boston tragedy where, you know, these two bombs went off within seconds of each other. Nobody knew if there was going to be another explosion. Nobody knew what was coming next. But after the initial shock, I mean, within moments, people basically ran one direction. And that wasn't away from the carnage. That was towards it. Because it's a basic human instinct to pull together in times of crisis. We can, you know, gather, we can gather resources. We can divvy up tasks. You know, we're better when we're together. I think they would take advantage of that. They'd wait until we did gather together to unleash the third wave. And I think that that would be something like a plague. We'd all be grouped together. Medical supplies would be far flung. And that's what happens in the book in the third wave. Birds are infected. They spread the infection over every single continent because birds don't recognize borders. And a genetically fine-tuned virus like Ebola Zaire would wipe out probably 98% of everyone who's left. So that's the third wave. The fourth wave would be a wave that would be a long time in the making, and also based on not current technology of ours, but certain, you know, theoretical technologies that, you know, serious scientists have proposed could be in our future. I forget where I think it was in the New York Times Magazine. I read an interview with a leading, I think he was a physicist, into computers, and saying that, you know, it is conceivable that at some point in our future we could achieve virtual immortality by being able to upload our psyches into a computer. So the idea for the fourth wave is an advance guard of aliens who have been able to, because they're thousands of years more advanced than us, download their own psyches into human hosts. And that is basically where the book begins, at the tag end of that wave, when humanity has realized that everyone you meet, anybody that you come across, could be one of them. And therefore, you know, that's one of the final blows in stripping us of our humanity, because you can never trust anyone again. Which is back what you mentioned earlier about Cassie realizing, you know, who can I trust?
And let's not tell anybody about the fifth wave.
No. Which may be the most insidious and evil of all.
Well, I found myself thinking about these waves and obviously how convincing this story is. And I guess I imagined if the end of civilization would go down, this would be plausible. All of this, which is fiction, gives characters choices that I felt like I went through as a teenager.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about how you draw that giant story down into the personal there.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, one of the great challenges, you know, to make it, you know, personal. It is a huge sort of epic kind of concept and story. And I realized early on, my original concept was to tell the story entirely through the eyes of my protagonist, Cassie, a 16-year-old, just normal high school girl from Ohio. And I realized about halfway through her narrative that not only could I not do the story justice just through one narrator, but it was a wonderful sort of challenge to me as a writer to tell the story from different perspectives. Not only, you know, structurally to try to pull it off, but thematically and, you know, sort of emotionally satisfying to do it that way. It occurred to me recently that, you know, I've written 13 books, and in every one of them I use the first person. And every single one is a first person narrator. And I think that goes back to my days in the theater, and almost like I'm an actor who is slipping in and out of, you know, different roles. So it was a fun challenge, you know. Obviously I've been a teenager, but I've never been a girl. And Cassie is my first, you know, female narrator. Had some trepidation, but I mean, it was, you know, it was great fun. In a sense, you know, seeing the world through her eyes.
The ending, obviously, quite wonderfully made for a sequel.
Yes. There will be two more books in the series, and the sequel will come out next year about the same time.
And as if I couldn't have guessed, I see that Hollywood's already interested.
Oh, yes. The film rights were sold even before the book was completed to Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man's company, and GK Films, which did Argo and the Dark Knight trilogy.
And are they moving forward on a movie? Or?
Yes, yeah. I just got news from my agent that they are actively looking for a screenwriter for the process, and I'll be having meetings with them this summer.
Will you be part of the screenwriting process?
I have no idea.
Would that be fun?
It would be fun. You know, I did some screenwriting. In fact, my very first novel is based on a screenplay that I actually wrote. So I do have a little bit of experience, but, you know, it's so different. Screenwriting is so different from novel writing. It's a whole different sort of skill and craft, and not something that I certainly take lightly, having done it, some of it myself. You know, it takes a special skill to be able to take an entire book and, you know, boil it down to its essence for a 2-hour film.
The great part of it is, though, it's all dialogue, really, your book. It's an internal dialogue for the most part, but...
Yes, that's true, yes.
And there's a lot of action.
One of my goals, too, is to almost, particularly for this series, is to almost have the reader have the sensation that they're reading a movie, that it happens at that sort of clip. And I paid a lot of attention to and worked very hard on the dialogue between the characters.
Rick Yancey's new book is The Fifth Wave. He'll be at Book People tonight at 7. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you.
With KUT News.